What's happening? Another Wildcast podcast coming your way right here on Apple, Spotify, and also Tucson.com. If you're watching the video version of this podcast, I'm Justin Spears here with my guy, Michael Lev, and we're going to be talking all things Arizona football training camp. Now that we're officially a week in, Arizona's had six practices, and we've had a good look at the Wildcats. Tuesday night was the first time that we saw Arizona in full pads, and while it was really like a mix and match of the twos and the threes, it was mostly a really good time for the backups. Lots of interesting stuff that we took away from Arizona's first fully padded practice. But there were some other things in the previous five that were also very interesting. So kind of like the last episode that we recorded, my guy Mike Lev and I were going to go down position by position and look at all the Wildcats and see who's standing out and if there's any areas of concern as we approach the August 30th season opener against Hawaii. Now we're a little over 3 weeks away at the time that we are recording this podcast. So season is right around the corner. But Lev, I do think we should, you know, start off on the offensive side of the ball and then work our way down to defense and special teams. Let's start off with the low-hanging fruit here in quarterbacks. And I think that, you know, one thing that Seth Dagey said that was really interesting was when he first got to Arizona, he knew that Noah Fifita was special. He knew that that was QB1. But if Noah Fifita is unable to go, what does that mean for Arizona? Does that mean the season is over with? And so one of the first priorities he had when he took over as Arizona's offensive coordinator was finding an established backup, a guy that can take over the reins. You know, it may not be at the same level as Noah Fifita, but you would like to think it's pretty damn close. And they found a guy in Braden Locke, who's a transfer from Wisconsin. He's from Texas and started his career at Mississippi State and played for Mike Leach, which is also the same head coach that Seth Dagey played for while he was at Texas Tech. And Braden Locke is an established starter at the Power Four level, played in a lot of big games at Wisconsin. And so you feel like if Braden Locke is somehow inserted in the game at any point this season, you feel confident that he's going to keep the offense afloat. And I got to say, Lev, some of the throws that he has made in camp so far, I'm like, man, this dude could start at a lot of places, but he is Noah Fifita's backup. I mean, his accuracy is pretty damn good for a backup. And you actually tweeted this out earlier, and I agree with you, that Braden Locke might be the best backup in the Big 12. Like, how many backups are thrown at that kind of level? It's been very impressive, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who all the backups are necessarily. We haven't watched them practice on a day-to-day basis like we have Braden Locke. But if you just look at his resume, it's pretty impressive. I mean, he didn't put up amazing numbers at Wisconsin, but started at Wisconsin and played against some really big-time programs. He comes here in a situation where he knows that he's unlikely to be the starter, right? I mean, there's an established guy, as you said, a clear QB1, but he liked the fit. He had, you know, something of a relationship with Seth Dagey from the recruitment days, and comes in here, and it's been a great fit. He and Noah are both very mature. It seems like they're both 30 years old when in actuality they're like 22, right? Just have that way of carrying themselves. And then last night during the scrimmage, man, Braden Locke, he was really making some gorgeous passes. He dropped one in the bucket on the right sideline to Brandon Phelps. And the last play of practice was a high point catch by, I want to say it was it Devin Hyatt or Rex Haynes?
I want to say it was Rex Haynes.
Yeah, I think it was Rex Haynes.
Yeah.
Who kind of looks like a tight end, honestly. Like he's a really big dude.
Yeah,
and we'll get to tight end in a few minutes. But a beautiful like high point, pinpoint throw on the sideline enabled his big receiver to go up and get the ball. Had some good throws over the middle too. So I feel really good about the depth at quarterback. Noah Fifita's been a little bit up and down during camp. I thought Monday was really good, and then I thought Tuesday not quite as good, but it also seemed like they were running some weird plays. I don't know. They weren't throwing over the middle as much. I don't know. Maybe they were working on some specific stuff. You never know, like, you know, what's on the agenda as far as the plays go. But I feel confident in Arizona's quarterback situation. And as you mentioned, you know, that was a big priority for Seth Dagey. He had to fill out the room because when he got here, there were only two guys, basically, right? There was Noah Fifita and then incoming freshman Luke Haugo.
Yep.
And now they've got Braden Locke, who's got 2 years of eligibility, and Sawyer Anderson, the prolific freshman or prolific high school quarterback from Texas, who's a true freshman, who's kind of built like Noah. Like, he's a little undersized. He's got great movement skills. He can throw from different arm angles. He sort of seems like a playmaker when I watch him.
Yeah, and it was also the Tuesday practice was an opportunity for those backups to get in. And I thought Haugo made some really good throws. Him and Isaiah Mizell had a nice connection there. And then I was really impressed with Mason Bray, the son of the late Heath Bray, who was a special teams and defensive standout. I think he also played on the offensive side of the ball while he was at Arizona. Heath Bray was like the ultimate Swiss Army knife, the ultimate Dick Tomey player, right? Like, tough, hard-nosed, under-recruited, right? I think he joined as a walk-on. He epitomized the Dick Tomey era at Arizona. And Heath passed away, I believe, a couple of years ago, and Arizona added his son, Heath Bray, who had a really great career at Scottsdale Saguaro, won a state championship. And we hadn't really seen him in team periods. Like, he's mostly just been the guy that's in drills and, you know, the one-on-ones and stuff like that. But we got a chance to see him in the team period. And not only did, you know, he make a couple of nice throws, but he also took off on a couple too and picked up some first down. So, yeah, quarterback is in a really good spot for Arizona. From QB1 all the way down to the walk-ons.
Yeah, Mason Bray, he looked like a good athlete.
Yeah.
You know, and again, they're not, you know, they're not going to tackle the quarterback in these scenarios, even the, you know, the fourth or fifth string guys. So, you know, you have to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, but he showed some quickness, good instincts, kind of knew when to take off, got to the sideline, et cetera. So, yeah, I think that position is going to be very well coached too by Seth Dagey. Really seems to know his stuff. He's very detail oriented, and he's just seems like he's kind of obsessed with the job, which is what you want if you're a U of A fan.
Absolutely. All right, now moving down to the running backs. Very interesting group here because, you know, I think about where the running backs were at last year, and I felt like last year I was more excited about the running backs just because we saw a lot of big plays from Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt. And I feel like there haven't been as many big plays in training camp from the running backs. Freshman Wesley Yarbrough, he's had a couple of impressive runs in training camp. But Ismail Mahdi, you know, he finally broke off for a long run at the start of practice on Tuesday. You know, he hasn't had the big plays like Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, but looks like a very promising running back. Kedrick Risino was dubbed the best blocker out of the group by running backs coach Alonzo Carter. And one of his biggest mantras, and it's on his wall, it's no block, no rock. And those running backs need to protect Noah Fifita as much as they can this year, especially with the uncertainty up front on the offensive line. But yeah, that group is really, really interesting. And then the one guy I actually just wrote about him, you know, when talking about the versatility and just kind of how all these pieces fit, is Quincy Craig. And Quincy started at slot receiver at Mater Dei, and that's because Mater Dei, they had Relique Brown, who's starting at ASU. They had another guy as well who's the starting running back at Sacramento State. So even though he was recruited to play running back out of high school, he wasn't really used as a running back. He was more of a slot receiver. Well, that actually paid out to be a benefit for Arizona because, you know, they needed a slot running back type of guy. And he said at the high school level, playing for a national powerhouse in modern day, that's where he really developed his route running abilities, and it translated over into the college level. So I look at Ismail Mahdi, Kedrick Reasonneau, Quincy Craig as those top three running backs. Those are your mainstay guys. And then Wesley Yarbrough, who's built like a truck, man. I mean, you know, over 6 foot, 211 pounds as a true freshman looking like that. I mean, Alonzo Carter kind of joked around and said, you know, these guys are over here looking at Kedrick like, man, this guy's bigger than you. And you're in your third year and this guy's going to be a true freshman. So I look at Wesley Yarbrough as a good future running back for Arizona, right? Like we may see him get some looks this year. Fortunately, he can play in four games, maybe five, if they get to a bowl game, and then they can preserve that year. I look at those four guys as the top four running backs, and then you have Cornelius Warren III, the highly touted recruit, or the guy that was so productive out of Dallas, North Crowley High School. So those are the main scholarship running backs, but those top three that I just mentioned, I'm really curious to see how that's going to work in the Seth Diggy system.
Yeah, I think the thing I like the best about the top three is they're all different from one another. Like Ismail Mahdi's he's a smaller guy, kind of a scat back, a little bit more wiggle to his game, and we did finally see him break off a big run. It came right our way. If you guys want to watch the video that they posted on Arizona football streaming channels, you can see the whole media crew the end of the run. None of us seem overly impressed. We're just hanging out, standing there, minding our business. But Ismail came running by, got to the pylon for a big touchdown. And then, you know, Kedrick Reasonneau, he's a bigger back. Right. I mean, he's well over 200 pounds. He's thick. He's strong. He can run between the tackles. Quincy Craig, he showed up at kind of the end of spring and he's continued to show up. He's kind of squatty and powerful, unusual build for someone who's probably going to be a third down back. Right. And as you mentioned, someone who can play in the slot a lot. Man, Wesley Yarbrough looks the part. Absolutely. Like he's like really big and thick and strong for a freshman. And look, you've painted a scenario where he plays four games, maybe five, but you're one injury away from him being in the top three, right?
Y'all mean, shoot, if you played last year with the whole situation with Ja'Cory and Speedy, hey, Wesley, you're the number two guy.
It could have happened. Number three. It could have happened that way. And I think they're going to play three running backs. I don't think there's going to be like a dominant back who is eating up all the carries, which is fine. It's, you know, it's a long season. It's the most physical position there is on the offensive side of the ball. Those guys get hit a bunch. So I think you're going to see running back by committee. They all kind of do different things. And I think they can all be effective if the offensive line is doing its job, which we'll get to in a few minutes.
Yep. So the by the way, Quincy Craig, Alonzo Carter said is pound for pound one of the strongest guys on the team.
I believe it. Yeah,
I was impressed, man, when he said the numbers. Because think about this, Quincy Craig is 186 pounds, something like that.
196
or 196. So think about this, 196 pounds. He could squat over 500.
Is that a lot?
And it's a lot, man. You're bending the bar at that point. Like, that's just absurd weight. And then he can also bench press 365. That's pretty damn strong. And yeah, when you put up those numbers and then compare it to his body weight, yeah, Alonzo Carter definitely has a case for Quincy Craig being the pound for pound strongest guy on the team. But moving down to tight ends, wide receivers. Let's start off with wide receivers. We can maybe package them in with tight ends. But, you know, receivers is an interesting one because I can't tell you who is the clear-cut wide receiver one. Maybe Chris Hunter just because he's had the few big plays in camp, right? He's had, three really long touchdown catches from Noah Fafita. So, you know, if you're going to say, okay, who's wide receiver one, I'll say, okay, Chris Hunter. But man, so many guys have made plays in camp. Like Trey Spivey has had a number of impressive catches. Chris Hudson, you know, a little up and down, but man, when he's on, he's, you know, one of arguably Arizona's top wide receivers. And then Luke Weisong, he may not start, but earlier on Wednesday, he was named to the Biletnikoff Award preseason watch list. Like, this guy's on the Biletnikoff watch list, and he may not start for Arizona. I mean, it just shows what kind of talent they have. And they've got really good freshmen in Gio Richardson and Isaiah Mizell. What role those guys play, we'll find out. Maybe those guys are redshirt type of players. But, yeah, man, I know that last year had Tetterell McMillan, but I really, really feel like Arizona's receivers 1 through 10, it's as good as it's ever been in several years.
Yeah, it's like a different guy every day, right? Chris Hunter had an awesome day. I think it was Monday. Made this great catch on the sideline. He got a little banged up. He was not a participant in last night's practice. Didn't seem like it was that big of a thing. We'll see. But he really came on in the second half of last year. Seems like he's got good chemistry with Noah Fifita. He's really the only returning receiver who played any significant snaps. Right. I mean, Brandon Phelps was on the team, but he was hurt. I guess he had a rough day on Sunday when I wasn't there, but he looked really good last night.
Yeah.
Like outstanding, big, strong, you know, can make those kind of difficult, delicate sideline catches, can use his big body to his advantage. I think Luke Weisong is someone like on third down, like he's going to make a lot of plays on third down. He's going to line up in the slot. He's going to find a soft spot in his zone, and he's going to get you 7 yards when you need six, right? I think that's just going to be his role. And then, yeah, Trey Spivey, like he's had moments too where he's looked like a power forward, you know, and he's just using his big body to post up on people, high point the ball, bring it down. So, yeah, very encouraged by that group. I think that it's going to be similar to running back in that it's going to be more of a committee thing, which is fine. Right. I mean, you don't have to have a clear cut number one wide receiver. Eventually, over time, I'm sure two or three guys will just have the most reps and the most stats. But I feel like any given week during the season, it's going to be a different wide receiver who has a big game and who's going to be the guy who we talk to in the interview room afterward. Right. It's just not going to be like it was a year ago where it was just kind of the T-Mac show. For better or worse.
And I feel like that's a really good thing for Arizona because that unpredictability, it's so hard to game plan against that. Like you never know who that guy is going to be for that week.
So, yeah, look, there's no question that last year, Noah Fifita locked in on T-Mac probably more than he should have.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there were just times when he's just like, kind of like, hey, this is our guy. This is my guy. Let's find him. Let's throw him the ball. I mean, he was awesome, of course. I mean, he was the 8th pick in the draft. I mean, he's All-American, all of those things. But, you know, you don't want to do that at the expense of running the offense. This is a different offense that is, I think, is, you know, they're setting up Noah in a position where he's more of a point guard distributing the ball all over to whoever's open.
Yeah,
and the more you know, speedy, quick guys you have in your receiving corps, the greater the chances that they will get open. And that was a big priority for Brent Brennan and his staff to just improve the overall speed of the room. And I think they've done that.
Like Jeremiah Patterson, for instance, as far as like Arizona's the pecking order of Arizona's receivers last year, where would you put Jeremiah Patterson? Maybe third, fourth?
Last year, third or fourth.
This year,
he's like seventh. Yeah.
Oh man, I was gonna say like closer to 10. Like,
I mean, he looks like he's the number one return guy in the kicking game.
And this is nothing on Jeremiah Patterson, like solid player. But like, I think it just speaks to the guys that they've added.
Yeah, they've improved the room for sure. And, you know, you're talking about Gio Richardson and Isaiah Mizell. I think personally that Mizell is a redshirt candidate just because he's really needs a year in the weight room.
Yeah.
He's listed at 6'1", 164. I mean, you see the speed, how he can go over the top and separate from people, but you got to build up your body to play Division I college football. And he just doesn't look like he's ready to me. I met him at that career event that they had in this, I think it was in the spring of, of this past year. And he looked really young, even for a college kid, he looked really young. I'm like, okay, this guy doesn't seem like he's ready for college football. We've seen guys like that dude, Ryan Williams at Alabama, I think was 17 years old last year when he was doing all the stuff that he was doing. So it is possible. But I think Isaiah needs a year in the weight room before he's ready for this level of ball.
No doubt. But we mentioned Jeremiah Patterson being Arizona's punt returner, right? He's a guy that's getting some reps there. A guy who I think is really going to be maybe one of Arizona's most valuable players, just in terms of what they do on offense and the special team space, is Luke Weisong. And, you know, there are guys that have made careers in the NFL just strictly doing special teams. Like, who's that guy for the Patriots? Was it Slater? Matthew Slater?
Yeah, Matthew Slater, yep.
Yeah, Matthew Slater, right? Receiver, right? Listed as a receiver, but he made Pro Bowls for what he did as a special teams guy. technically, a former Wildcat, even though he only played here for the spring and didn't even play a snap. Brendan Schooler, right, was a wide receiver, and he's been playing in the NFL for the last few years for the Patriots because of what he can do in special teams, not just as a returner, but, you know, a guy on punt coverage, just a guy that is a good athlete, is fearless, and just always makes the right plays. And I feel like Luke Weisong is going to be one of those type of guys for Arizona, just a guy that's everywhere on the field minus defense.
Yeah, this is before your time, but Steve Tasker, who's been a broadcaster for a long time, he was that guy for the Buffalo Bills for like a decade or plus.
Yeah.
You know, like he was just a special teams ace. And, you know, they brought back the kick. They've you know, created ways to increase the number of kickoffs that are returned with the new rules and the setup that they have now. So, yeah, there's roles for those guys. And Luke Weisong, I think he's going to be one of those core special teamers this year who's just on all the units. We didn't mention Javon Watley either.
Yeah, no.
I think a little bit up and down in camp in terms of catching the ball, but when he does secure it, man, he is really quick, really explosive. Could be another guy who's involved in the return game.
All right, now let's move down to tight ends. Tight ends is very interesting, and you know there have been guys that are in and out of the lineup, but it's good to see Cam Burnett back with Arizona, Tyler Powell, and Keen Burnett and Sam Olsen. Those guys look like the three leaders in the clubhouse when it comes to Arizona's tight ends group. And then, you know, you got some interesting prospects like Cameron Barmore, transfer from Mercyhurst, who had a really quiet spring and kind of got nudged down the depth chart a little bit. You know, now that he's been here for several months, maybe he starts to feel more comfortable, right? These coaches have said that, you know, some of these guys, when they first got here, they were just overthinking it because it's their first time at this level. It's their first time at Arizona. Like Ismail Mahdi in the spring was a little overwhelmed and then had to kind of settle down a little bit and is now looking like the Ismail Mahdi that we saw at Texas State. Maybe Cameron Barmore, right? Coming from Mercyhurst to Arizona, I'm sure that is a culture shock for him. And I'm sure it's, you know, taking some time to get used to everything. And then Kellen Ford, the true freshman from Northern California, who looks the part of a Power Four football player. Like, he looks like he could play right now. I don't really know what to make out of the tight ends just because, you know, we've only seen them for a week. But they're going to be a big part of Seth Dagey's offense, no doubt about that.
Yeah, Keen Burnett suffered a little setback on Monday. Got hurt during a drill. Wasn't able to participate yesterday. We'll see how long he's out for. This is obviously a critical year for him.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, you know, assuming that he's able to be healthy enough for the season, hit his last year of college football. He's a big time recruit, hasn't really lived up to his potential as of yet. Needs to prove that he can stay healthy. That's a big thing for him. I would say as of right now, based on, you know, injuries and reps and all that stuff, Tyler Powell and Sam Olsen are 1 and 2.
Yeah.
At this moment, subject to change. Cameron Barmore played more last night than I think we've seen him. And it's probably a good sign that the coaches just aren't yelling at him constantly throughout practice, which was kind of like what it was in spring, right? I mean, it was just, it seemed like he could do no right in spring. And so maybe he's settled in a little bit, which would be a good thing because he had some really like interesting film, you know, as kind of one of those guys who could split out into the slot and just be a mismatch. But, you know, you need, the game has to slow down for you. You, like you said, you can't be thinking out there or you're doomed. So maybe it is, maybe it is slowing down. You can just trust, you know, trust in what you're doing. Let your athletic ability sort of take care of itself out there. Kellen Ford, I think in a dream world, he was redshirting this year and is the tight end of the future, right? Because both Sam Olsen, I think Sam Olsen and Kean Burnett are both in their last years, right?
And Barmore too, I believe.
Is Barmore too? Okay. Yeah. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities for, that's correct. Yes. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities next year
him and Tyler Powell.
For tight ends. You know, Tyler Powell will be kind of the old guy and Kellen Ford might be his understudy if the progression works the way that you draw it out on paper. But yeah, a little banged up at that position. I mean, they haven't gotten a ton of action in the passing game, but they'll be involved. To be sure, this for the most part, I think is going to be a 3 wide, 1 tight end, 1 running back, but they do 2 tight ends at times too. And we haven't really seen their goal line packages yet. We saw a little bit of that in the spring and they had 3 tight ends out there. They classify Caden Luke as a tight end. He's really kind of more of a fullback or an H back. We saw him in the backfield a little bit last night. I guess that would be a pistol 2-back set. Where Caden Luke is kind of, you know, basically playing a blocking fullback role, and he's you don't want to see him coming at you, if you're a linebacker or a safety or a corner playing the edge, even a D end,
lit up somebody last night. Speaking of a blocking, this is the most important position group on Arizona's team right now. And the one that everyone is really talking about, the O-line. And right now, what we do know is that, like, if I were to say these guys are surefire starters for August 30th at their current position, Kiana DeCambra at center.
Agreed. Yep.
Alexander Deuced at right guard.
Agreed.
And that's all I got. Okay, I know that doesn't,
so, yeah.
All right. I know that doesn't help anything, but there's just so many moving pieces. We still got to see Rhino Tapatotai come back.
Yeah. So you're saying this, even though they've rolled out the same first five at the same positions every single practice. Now, the reason you're saying that is because they still are hoping that Rhino will be able to come back for the start of the season. We don't know for sure whether that will be the case. And when he does, where does he play? Like, if he goes to left tackle, then Ty Buchanan, I think, is one of the top five, right? Does he go to guard? Does he go to right tackle? So there's some dominoes there. And then last night, something really unexpected happened. And that's Jordan Brown, who was a transfer from Georgia Tech, who hurt his shoulder in the spring. And at that time, Brent Brennan said he'd be out like kind of deep into the season. But he was fully dressed and he was at least doing individual work. So I think that was a really encouraging sign. Maybe he comes back midseason.
Yeah.
You know, and I think if I recall, like when he first got here, he was one of their starting guards.
Starting left guard.
So it is conceivable that 2 of the guys they believe are their best 5 aren't practicing right now still. which doesn't really make you feel good about things, like in terms of like solidity and chemistry and cohesion and all of that. But if those guys are able to come back and be 100%, then maybe you kick a couple, move a couple guys around, move a couple guys down to the second string, then you kind of feel better about the overall situation, right? Yeah. Whereas now it feels like they're kind of thin, right? You got, you know, there's still developmental guys in that second unit that you really wouldn't want to play in a game if you didn't have to. But if Michael Wooten was part of the second unit instead of the first unit, or even like someone like a Tristan Bounds became like your swing tackle, like, man, you're like, okay, we got 7-8 guys now, yeah, that we'd feel good about playing in a game.
Because I thought about when Rhino comes back, he's going to be one of your starting tackles, right?
And probably, yeah.
And Ty Buchanan, like if you were to rank Arizona's tackles in terms of skills, importance, Rhino obviously being number one, being the returning veteran. And then Ty Buchanan, he's had a great spring, had a great training camp, and you know looks the part of a tackle and has been really good at left. And, you know, we've talked with some of the coaches and they said, you know, when Rhino first got to Arizona, he was a right tackle. So now we're thinking, okay, are they going to move Rhino over to right and then just have Tristan Bounds as like the, like you said, the swing tackle? If one of those guys is unavailable, you put Tristan Bounds either at left or at right. And then, you know, I started to dive more into Ty Buchanan's career at Texas Tech, and the guy played a little bit of guard at Texas Tech. So since he's got that experience, do you just say, okay, Rhino at left,
just move Tristan Bounds at
right tackle, and Ty Buchanan, you go down to left guard. And then what do you do with Chuba Ma'ai as well? You know, there's a lot of moving pieces right now. And then that Jordan Brown thing, like you said, was very interesting because, you know, we were told maybe the last quarter of the season, like I was projecting him to come back in like November or something like that. And just, you know, maybe play a couple of games, redshirt this year. I don't know if he still has the ability to redshirt, and then just get ready for next season. So, yeah, there's a lot of moving pieces right now. I honestly couldn't tell you. You know, I know we've said this before. You know, I would probably project a starting lineup of Rhino Tapatotai, Chuba Ma'ai, Kaina DeCambra, Alexander Deust, and Tristan Bounds. But you never know. There's a lot of uncertainty and some moving parts with his offensive line right now.
Yeah, I don't think that Jordan Brown has a redshirt year based on his bio. It seems like he's already used that. So
yeah,
kind of this is it. One thing I will say about center position, which was a big spotlight coming into camp, and you know, knock wood, not trying to jinx him, but haven't seen a bad snap from Kaina DeCambra as of yet. And that was a concern for someone who'd never played center before the spring, right? So I think that is definitely a positive, because if the snap is bad, it just throws off the timing of the play.
Yeah,
the whole operation gets messed up. So I think that's a good thing. Alexander Deust at right guard, very steady, solid, strong, has a little bit of experience now. So said, those are the two where you're kind of like, okay, this looks like these are the starters, and the rest is subject to change over the course of the season.
It's fluid, that's for sure. Okay, now let's move over to the defensive side of the ball.
Yep.
And let's start off with the trenches, right? Because the other guys, I feel like when we start inside and work our way out, like those are the positions of concern, right? We're really worried about Arizona's defensive secondary, but the biggest worry is on the defensive line and what those guys are going to look like. Are they going to go into a three-man front, into a four-man front? I think it honestly depends on who they're playing that week. You know, I really think the defensive front is all going to be tailored towards the type of offenses that they're playing against. But as far as like key contributors on Arizona's defensive line, I like the tandem of Trey Smith, Dominic L'Alessio coming off the edge. You know, we've seen some good stuff from the twos, right? The backups. I think Edowa Okunde, the redshirt freshman from Texas, he's really starting to emerge. I'm not going to say that he's going to put up Isaiah Ward type numbers, but when you look at his slender frame and his athleticism, you know, you look at him and you're like, okay, that guy needs to put on some weight if he wants to play D end at the power four level. But Isaiah Ward was also really skinny. I know he was a little bit taller than Etowah, but you know, that skinny athletic defensive end still found a way to make it work. Maybe Etowah can kind of follow suit there, but Tia Savea, Deshaun McKnight are going to be your two starters on the inside. And then behind him or behind those guys is where it gets really interesting, because we don't know the status of Ezra Funa and Zach Siulepa, these two junior college prospects that are expected to have prominent roles if they're able to get through their academic stuff. Brent Brennan said at Media Day that those two are getting through some academic stuff and are trying to become eligible and cleared so that they can officially join the team and start practicing and getting ready for the season. There is a possibility that, you know, if one or both of these guys are unable to get cleared, that they have kind of like a academic redshirt where they're still a part of the team, they're still practicing, they're with the Wildcats, but they're not going to be able to play. And then they'll work on getting eligible for the following season. But until those guys come, Lev, what do you make of the other interior defensive linemen that the Wildcats have added?
Yeah. Well, Deshaun McKnight has been a little bit banged up the last few days, which has enabled Leroy Palu, junior college transfer, to run with the ones. I think that's a positive in the long run, that he's getting those reps because they're going to need him. I think, you know, Jara Bear Anderson is someone who can definitely have a role in the interior. We've seen him make plays in the backfield during training camp. He's undersized. He's in like the 270 range, but really quick. They've used the word twitchy to describe him.
Yeah.
The Chancellor Owens is getting some looks on the inside. They say he's one of the strongest players on the team, if not the strongest player on the team, but he's raw, right? Like technique wise. But hey, you know, just keep working, keep pounding rocks, right? Keep developing, and he might turn into something, because like frame wise, like he looks like what you want a defensive tackle to look like.
Yep.
The one who is encouraged me the most during training camp is actually Malachi Bailey, who was a defensive end transfer from Alcorn State, right?
Yep.
Shout out to Steven there. He did absolutely nothing of note in training camp, in spring ball, I should say, at least that we saw, right? And we watched pretty much every rep of every practice. Like, it just was not noticeable, was not getting snaps with the ones or twos. He's been with the twos pretty regularly. And maybe, like you were kind of referencing with Cameron Barmore, maybe this is one of those cases where it was a little overwhelming at first, right? To move up from that level to this level. Maybe it's starting to click for him a little bit. That way, if he could be a thing and play like 20, 25 snaps a game and be effective, I think that would be a huge boost for them, because he put up crazy numbers at Alcorn State. Like, he had 28 sacks in 34 games for Alcorn, 46 and a half tackles for loss. So there's talent there.
Yep.
Right. It's a matter of kind of figuring it out. He is differently. He's built much differently than Etowah Okunde, who you were talking about earlier. They're about the same height, but I mean, Malachi Bailey listed at 35 pounds heavier.
Yeah.
At 278. So really more of like a strong side defensive end. And they need someone to back up Trey Smith. Right? You don't want Trey Smith playing 80 snaps a game at that strong side end position. So I've been encouraged by what I've seen from him, from Malachi Bailey, after he was just sort of a MIA in spring ball.
And honestly, maybe that's the development of camp. Maybe that's one of the storylines of training camp, is the FCS guys. Now that they're settled in, they've experienced Power Four football over the last several months, maybe that's all they needed. And Malachi Bailey, I think he's kind of the perfect defensive lineman for what Danny Gonzalez wants to do, because like he's thick enough to play defensive tackle, but he's also athletic enough and twitchy enough to play defensive end. And when Danny Gonzalez rolls out of 3-3-5, maybe that's the kind of body type that you would want out there. A guy that could play DN, but also a guy that can slide down and maybe play that three technique.
I got to say, for those, and I don't think they've had any open practices yet. I think they're going to coming up here, have a showcase for fans. And I don't know how much they're going to show in that showcase whenever they have it, but Danny Gonzalez is rolling out all kinds of different looks on defense. We are not really allowed to describe exactly what we've seen, but I mean, it seems like from one play to the next, you have no idea what you're going to get, the way they line up, what they're doing, guys who are like standing up, dropping, rushing. Like, he is determined to create confusion. And I will say too, like, they haven't had like substitution foul issues. And I think they are like tracking that and monitoring that, and they will penalize the team if they're doing any of that stuff wrong. I remember when Don Brown was here in 21 and they had a bunch of different defensive packages. It seemed like the communication was lacking at times, and they'd have too many men on the field, or they'd have to call timeout or whatever. It seems like they've kind of set things up to where, like you said, defenders who are versatile, you know, maybe they could play defensive tackle or defensive end, or guys, you know, like Riley Wilson and Chase Kennedy are kind of like defensive ends, but also linebackers who can do different things.
Yeah.
And that is one of the reasons, I think, that it seems like the offensive line is struggling at times, because Danny's throwing everything at him. Yeah. And I think that is a great approach to just being a defensive coordinator in college football in general, especially when you don't have a bunch of projected, you know, first round picks on your defensive line, like a Georgia or a Texas.
Yeah.
Right. Danny Gonzalez is coming from places like San Diego State and New Mexico, where, you know, when you're a lot of the times, maybe you're at a disadvantage talent wise. So you have to come up with ways to compensate for that.
And speaking of Chase Kennedy and Riley Wilson, those guys are a part of the linebacker core, and they've got some good linebackers there. I mean, those two guys that we just mentioned, Max Harris at Texas State, he's a guy that is, you know, kind of a journeyman in college football. This is his fourth school in as many years, but he's been productive at every single school. And now maybe this is, you know, his opportunity to, you know, really showcase that he is a legitimate college football player, maybe a guy that can play at that next level. And then Tay Brown has really stepped up as a leader. And now that he has played a full year of college football and has been kind of challenged to be that leader, he's taken that challenge and has run with it. And I think Tay Brown's going to be in for a big year. And those four guys are your leaders, but they've gotten some encouraging looks from Leviticus Sua. And Leviticus is a guy that kind of gets lost in the sauce when you talk about like the most recent recruiting classes. He was their guy in 2023, committed to Arizona at the Polynesian Bowl, was the Trinity League MVP, if I'm not mistaken, like just straight up, not even Defensive Player of the Year, but just Trinity League MVP. Regardless, he was dubbed as one of the top players in a high school football conference that might be the best in the entire country. And to do that at modern day, like Leviticus Sua was a dude coming out of high school. And then he comes to Arizona and is just MIA. Well, come to find out, he was dealing with injuries, and he's also an underclassman too. So maybe now that he's a junior and healthy, we could see Leviticus take that next step. And so far in training camp, I think he has looked like the Leviticus Sua that we thought we were going to see when he first got to Arizona.
Yeah, I remember when he first arrived and was out on the field, he just looked like slow. Like everything was a step slow. He just was sort of like, wow, where's the athleticism that we saw in his high school film, right? they said that he had a back issue. And if anyone's ever had a back issue, you know, it really hampers your ability to do anything. He looks healthy. And this is big because like those inside linebacker spots, maybe Riley Wilson can be one of those guys. I don't know if they want to use him in that way, but you need some backups there. You know, like there's no guarantee that Tay Brown and Max Harris are going to be healthy for all 12 games. So I think Leviticus has established himself as the clear number three. And Blake Gotcher, who again, very similar, another guy similar to Barmore, similar to Malachi Bailey, like didn't do anything in spring ball. I believe Danny Gonzalez mentioned the other day that he was a little banged up. So maybe there was an injury issue there.
Also,
again, like big adjustment, right? Big adjustment coming from that level to this level. And last night he got a ton of run. He actually made some plays. So maybe he could be a backup in there as well. That would be really helpful if you can just sort of establish like these are your four inside linebackers, you know, as opposed to coming into, let's say, late in spring ball, it was like felt like maybe they had two and a bunch of question marks.
Yeah.
You know, maybe now we can say, all right, maybe these are our four guys. We haven't seen freshman Myron Robinson really do much of anything. He's dealing with some sort of injury issue and working his way back. He was dressed last night, so maybe he's close to getting out there. That's someone that, you know, among those freshmen that I think we thought could break through and actually play in his first year. Now, who knows? I think it, you know, depends on how healthy he is, you know, how the guys in front of him are doing, how healthy they remain. But I was definitely concerned about the depth at that position for a while there. And I feel a little bit better about it after some recent developments.
I mean, shoot, walk-on Dominic Hanger was like one of the top defensive standouts.
Sure, I know. Which is like, is that like great for Dominic? But, you know, you're sort of like, okay, this, you know, this guy is not supposed to be getting significant reps. Like, I don't know, maybe it's a breakthrough for him. Maybe he's one of those guys who is going to go from, you know, walk on to scholarship, that kind of thing. But yeah, of course, and as we mentioned before too, a lot of this depends on the front. Like the front has to do its job so that the linebackers can do their job. And if they're getting blown off the ball and, you know, running back is running through a huge hole with no obstruction, not getting touched, you know, any linebacker is going to struggle in that situation. So we'll see how that all plays out.
Now moving on to what is probably the deepest position group with the Wildcats, defensive backs, Genesis Smith, Dalton Johnson. Those are your two starters at safety. I would envision Tre'Don Stukes when he comes back from his injury that he will be Arizona's starting nickel. And Gavin Hunter has been getting a lot of run at that starting nickel spot. And in the spring, Aiden Garnes was kind of like that Stukes backup. Like he's going to play the nickel. He's got a lot of experience at it, playing at West Virginia and also at Duquesne. But lately, Aiden Garnes out there on the outside, Michael Dansby across the way over the transfer from San Jose State. He's also been getting a lot of run with the starters. Lev, if you were to tell me at the end of spring, who are you banking on to be the starting cornerbacks for Arizona? I would have said Javion Cole, Marquise Groves-Killebrew. Now, I'm not so sure, but that's a good problem for Arizona because, you know, those other two guys that I just mentioned, in Cole and Marquise Groves-Killebrew, even if they, you know, somehow don't start, you have four really good cornerbacks. And then these freshmen that are coming up, man, these guys are physical. They're fearless. Yeah, they need some work in the weight room. But, man, those cornerbacks, that was an interesting position going into training camp. And I feel really good. I feel really, really good about that spot.
What's the line from Hamilton? Young, scrappy, and hungry.
Yep,
that's how I would describe the the freshman from Texas. But we'll get to them in a minute. We came into training camp talking about how great their depth was at safety, right? Now I feel like we can apply the same description to cornerback. You know, like man, Michael Dansby's been terrific. Really seems like he is
one of their top DBs in camp.
Broken out. Yeah, for sure. And Aiden Garnes, and if you looked at his numbers from West Virginia, it seemed like he'd be more effective in the he was more effective in the slot than outside. He's been really good on the outside. Javian Cole had some rough moments early in this camp, had a great day last night and got a ton of reps. Like he was out there, felt like the entirety of the practice at that left cornerback spot. Marquise Groves-Killebrew, super talented. Interesting that they were having him and some other guys use boxing gloves during one-on-ones. It's a great photo that U of A posted of him breaking up a pass with the boxing glove on his hand, like reaching up like Jumpman to knock it down. And the idea behind that is like, hey, you can't grab, like you're going to be penalized. You need to learn to use your feet, you know, read your cues, et cetera. So putting the boxing gloves on, they can't grab. So I think that's a smart coaching technique. So really like what I've seen there. I think Jack Luttrell has had a good camp. He's someone you'd feel just fine plugging him in at safety if need be. Gavin Hunter, I wasn't really thinking much about Gavin Hunter coming into the camp, and he's been running with the ones exclusively while Traydon Stukes works his way back. Okay. Now, those freshmen from Texas. Yeah. These are some really good looking young players. Brennan told us that Suede Griffin might be the best all around athlete on the team, you know? So, okay. We like that. Like that, that's like an encouraging thing. Coleman Patman, very physical, big safety. Who's going to be getting playing time with the twos. And then my guy, Gianni Edwards, who's all of 158 pounds on the roster, also been getting playing time with the twos and the threes out there at corner. And he is just, he's just a dog, man. He's just one of those guys. Reminds me a little bit of Lorenzo Burns. Who had a really good career here and was always kind of undersized, but tough, right? Tough and physical. And you just couldn't get him off the field. Just kind of fight through anything. Gianni Edwards looks like one of those kind of guys to me. So those dudes are all from the state of Texas. And there's another one too, Cason Brown, who they brought in, another freshman defensive back from Texas. And, you know, one of the things they're looking for in players, right? Or two of the things, tough and do they love football? Check, check. Most of the guys you bring in from Texas are gonna check those two boxes, and these guys seem like they do so far.
Man, poor Lorenzo Burns, man. I always think of the 70-7 graphic. It's like he didn't ask for this, man. Why do you got to put him on the score graphic? But yeah, I've been very encouraged by Arizona's defensive backs in training camp so far. Now, let's talk about the kicking game real quick, Lev. You know, I thought it was, you know, Michael Sargano Medina. He was either going to start at punter, start at kicker. I mean, that still could very well be the case. But the guys that he's competing with, like, there's not too much of a drop off there. You know, for punter, I think it's safe to say that Australian Isaac Levison, who they just posted his height and weight, and I think he's like either 6'2" or 6'4". But he's 222 pounds. So he is built like a linebacker, essentially, and he's back there punting the football. A little inconsistent. Like when he booms it, I mean, he could kick the hell out of the football. And I think once he finds that consistency, whether they have him more as like a traditional punter or if they, you know, kind of do rugby style where they have him roll out for a little bit. I think once they find that consistency, I think that guy's going to be your starting punter. And then I thought, you know, Michael Sargano Medina was going to be your starting place kicker, but it's a Tyler Perjune guy, this guy that they added from Carlsbad, California. He's originally, or his dad used to kick for the Arizona Wildcats back in the day. He had a really good showing on Tuesday. I mean, he was, I think, 3 for 4, but, you know, showed off his leg over the last couple of practices, made one from 45, made one from 42. So even as a walk-on freshman, he's got that length, obviously not at the Tyler Loop level, but you feel confident in him being able to step out and kick it. And Michael Sagana Medina, I feel like over the last couple of practices, they've essentially been neck and neck, albeit Sagana Medina did make that 52-yarder at the end of the session. So there's that as well.
Yeah, I think the competition at place kicker is real.
It's real.
You know, like Michael Sagana Medina kind of came in as the favorite, but Tyler Pursoon is made up ground. And I think that's just going to go down to the wire, you know. And even during the season, if whoever wins the job isn't performing, I don't think they'd hesitate to maybe go look in another direction. I think Isaac Lovison is going to be the punter. The one thing I look at when I watch him and Michael Salgado Medina is just how quickly they get the ball off, and the operation with Lovison is quicker.
Yeah.
Like Michael Salgado Medina is just a little bit mechanical, a little bit slower. You worry about the punt getting blocked, you know, which I don't know. Maybe it happened once last year, but it felt like it almost happened a bunch of times. And like you said, Lovison, a little bit inconsistent, but really some good hang times. Seems like he can do different types of punts, you know, like you said, the rugby style end over end, or the, you know, the kind of the traditional more spirally type. Deep bombs. I think that they brought him in to be that guy. Ian Wagner is someone else that they added to the mix, he's basically been the holder so far. And we also saw him doing kickoffs last night. So no idea who the kickoff person is going to be. It could be Ian Wagner. Looks like he's going to be the holder full time. And that whole operation is really important, right? You got to get all the timing and all that stuff has to be just right for that to work. You know, no one is going to replace Tyler Loop, who we've already seen like making like 60-yard field goals for the Baltimore Ravens in practice. Like he's an all-timer. But hey, if you can make those kicks from 45 yards and in, that's really all that Arizona needs from that position. So hopefully, you know, one of those two guys between Salgado Medina and Pursoon can emerge and really be consistent at just, you know, kind of making the basic kicks.
Speaking of Tyler Loop, he could, if the Baltimore Ravens end up kicking off their first preseason game, he could kind of kick off the league-wide start of preseason, because they have the first game on Thursday. They're playing against the Indianapolis Colts at 4:00. And then all the guys that are playing for the Cincinnati Bengals this year, Tanner McLaughlin and Kwali Conley, you'll be able to watch those guys. And Tetterell McMillan will make his Panthers debut, maybe. I don't know. You know, preseason's always so weird because the stars sit out. But I feel like T-Mac, being a rookie, like I feel like you're going to see him play.
You'd like to think a little bit. Or two, yeah.
Right? Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited to watch NFL preseason and watch all these guys. And you know who's really been turning heads, Lev?
Oh, yeah. Jacory Kroski-Merritt, right?
Yeah.
I know. It really, truly makes you think what could have been, right? If they had this guy last year.
Yep.
Like, do they win the Texas Tech and West Virginia games and go 6-6?
I think they do.
And do we feel differently about a lot of things? Maybe. Those were the two games where they were kind of toss-ups, where they had a chance. I mean, he's, you know, people are talking about him maybe being the best running back on the team for the Commanders.
Man.
Right? So, legit dude. They had him for one game last year. Maybe he wasn't supposed to play at all because of eligibility issues. They weren't willing to take that chance. And yeah, it's definitely one of those what if scenarios that we could talk about forever.
Yeah. I'm also really excited to see our guy Roy Lopez play for the Detroit Lions as well. There's a handful of Arizona Wildcats currently in the
more NFL. So than like 5 years ago.
Oh, 5 years ago, right? It was like four dudes.
Yeah. So that's a good sign. Really important for the program.
You gotta
put players in the league, because that's what everyone wants. You know, yeah. Only a very small percentage make it, but everyone wants, they all want to do it. They all think they can do it. And you have to create a, you know, a situation where they have the best chance to reach their potential and develop.
NFL preseason week one, that starts up this week, getting started with the Baltimore Ravens against the Indianapolis Colts. And that's on Thursday. And then there will be all there'll be games all throughout the weekend. And then we've got week two of Arizona football training camp. We're just a little over 3 weeks away from the Arizona football season opener against Hawaii. You can check out my work. Check out Lev's column. Lev just wrote a column on the Wildcats focused on the process. Trust the process. I love that you made that reference to the Philadelphia 76ers, Lev. Trust the process. They were so focused on the results and the outcome that even the wins, it didn't feel good. And so now they're focused on, it's kind of like, it's like Phil Jackson, man. Zen, being present, being in the moment, focusing on where your feet are at. And maybe that's the recipe for success for Arizona. But Lev had a great column. Check it out on Tucson.com and the Wildcaster mobile app. And also check out all of our Arizona football coverage on those platforms. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and comment the Wildcast podcast on Apple and Spotify. And check us out on Tucson.com.